You're listening to Band Geek with Richie Castellano on the Riotcast Network. Riotcast.com.
Hey guys, this is Richie. Welcome to Band Geek Episode 7. This is a very special one for me. I mean, they're all very special, but this one is with my dad, John Castellano. So that's pretty awesome. My father's an incredible singer and guitar player. He was in the Chambers Brothers in the 70s, and he did a lot of cool projects since then. He was also a frequent game show contestant and an avid video gamer. So this is the John Castellano episode. This is going to be a two-parter again because he stayed down here for 2 hours just talking about stuff, telling stories, and jamming with us. So check it out. We hope you like it. Also, Blue Oyster Cult gigs coming up. If you are going to be in the Big Flats, New York area on Saturday, July 12th, we are playing at Tag's Outdoor Amphitheater with one of my favorite bands, Boston. That's going to be so awesome. So check it out. If you're in the area, come by, say hello. Subscribe to our show on riotcast.com. Leave comments, share, all that fun stuff. Enjoy the show. Thanks for listening. Okay, we're recording now. Someone start time.
Hold on, Philly. Hold on.
Why? You can't see it on there?
I could.
Welcome to the Band Geek Podcast.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
He's got to say it.
Oh, he's got to say it? Okay.
He's got to say it. You have a golden opportunity here.
I do. Oh, hold on. He's setting up.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Who's setting up?
The inimitable Ainsley Jarvis.
Inimitable?
Inimitable.
I don't know.
Is that a word?
No. I don't think it is.
Inimitable. The incomparable Ainsley Jarvis.
It's like Jackie Childs. It's unconstitutional. It's a podcast. It's egregious.
Can you do a welcome to the Band Geek Podcast?
Welcome to the Band Geek Podcast.
Can you do it again without Richie laughing?
I'm sorry, I'll be quiet now. Do it again.
That was actually a gremlin.
Welcome to the Band Geek Pod Podcast.
Again,
you're ruining it! Richie, hand over your mouth.
The Geek Pod Podcast.
Band Geek Podcast.
Band Geek Podcast.
I just coughed up a loogie on the windscreen.
That's what it's for.
Oh, I see it from over here.
The one you told me to play in, B flat.
Welcome to the Band Geek Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, our special guest today on our podcast is my dad, John Castellano.
It was the 3rd of September.
It was the 3rd of September. I'll always remember. Yes, I will. Cause that was the day that my dad and died, yeah. I never got a chance to see him. Mama just hung her head and was sad now. Papa was a rolling stone. Well. Wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
oh, he left us was a long one. Papa was a rolling stone. My son, well, wherever he laid his hat was his home.
And when he died,
oh, he left us was a long one.
Oh, that was the best intro.
Oh my God! Yeah, that's how you do that.
Did you see all the women's underwear falling from the sky?
I did. I think I have herpes of the eye now.
Should be of the ear.
Let's move up. Yeah. So, welcome to the Band Geek Podcast. I'm very excited to have our very special guest, John Castellano, today. Joining me today is Jarrett Pressman.
Shalom, y'all.
Who is actually going to be the main host today, because I feel like I'm not going to ask the right questions, because I know a lot of these stories already. So we're going to have Jarrett do all the heavy lifting today. Whose phone's ringing?
That's me farting. Oh,
sorry. Okay, sorry.
Buffalo Dad, Wild your Wings. Phone.
Hold on.
Go ahead, take it. Answer.
FT.
Answer it on the mic.
Hello?
It's Doreen. You know I'm going to answer it.
Actually, it might be entertaining. No. Anyway. Joining us again, back after a long hiatus.
Mm-hmm.
It was
1 week. Mr. No, it was like
Philip Castellano the third.
3 weeks?
Yeah.
Because Danny's...
Well, no, it's because Andy fired Phil. And
I
now
I didn't fire Phil.
First Danny fired Phil, then Andy fired Phil.
Who fired me?
You were fired.
Fired.
But I have I ever fired you? I've always kept you employed.
Great. Thank you, John.
So you're back, but you're on probation because you don't have an instrument in front of you.
I don't. I have harmonicas.
You have harmonicas? Okay.
And he has the whole device.
But you know what? I think you're kind of encroaching on Jarrett's territory right now by playing a mouth instrument.
Yeah.
Did you sign off on this, Jarrett?
I didn't.
Jarrett plays a skin flute.
Oh.
Which is a mouth instrument.
Wait, turn it around on me.
Is that why you've been going to yoga?
Yes. Yoga shmoga.
Now, I was busy taking Andy's job.
Oh, man, that's right. And Andy was busy taking my job.
What?
What's going on?
What's happening here?
Andy Ascalis is on the drums today.
Hey.
The electronic drums.
Electronic drums.
With a new
hi-hat pedal.
That's right. Andy that's what that's supposed to do?
Yeah.
Oh, amazing. You know what? Andy's been struggling with my broken-ass hi-hat pedal for the last 6 shows. So, you know, it's almost Andy's birthday, so happy birthday, Andy.
Thank
I bought
you.
Myself a present that you can use sometimes.
It's our special guest birthday.
It is, yeah, it is.
A couple days ago?
That's right. It was my dad's birthday.
Ah, yes. It's 13.
13 years old.
In his mind.
Joining us on vocals is my lovely wife, Anne-Marie.
Hello.
And also... hanging out, as usual, is our audience member, our audience of one, Brandy Metaxas. Applaud for yourself, audience.
Yay.
Hey.
Okay, so we started off with Papa Was a Rolling Stone, which we didn't rehearse, we didn't discuss, we just went into. And that worked out pretty good. Okay, so we have a lot to talk about today and a lot to play and all this stuff. So I'm going to hand it over to our very capable host... So today I'm the co-host and you're the main host.
Say something funny.
Who
man.
Are you talking about?
Jarrett's gonna be the host today.
Jarrett, you say something funny.
I'm the funny man.
Yeah. Let me get my poking stick.
Poker. Racist voice. Woohoo! Oh, wow. How's that? Is that good?
That's me. You nailed it. You're
gonna want that racist voice.
You're gonna. It's a little weird for me too, though, to interview your dad because I've known your dad for 25 years already.
Luke, I am your father.
I like you better than my father.
Oh wow! Well, because
you only yelled at me when I did bad stuff, but then I got to leave your house.
You know what? Once you've I think once you clogged our toilet and he had to clean up your poo, that solidified the bond between the two of you.
That's one way of putting it.
There's three things I remember about growing up with your dad. One was that instance where I clogged the toilet and then we're like, bye, we have to go to school. We're like 12.
He made a little adobe hut in the toilet.
The second thing is I remember when you played his record for me.
Yeah.
And I can't even remember. Carry It On. And I don't know why I thought it was the most amazing thing in the world. I was like, your dad has a record? Neat.
I did that when I was like 18 years old.
Awesome.
And then the other thing too is...
Talk close to the mic.
Oh, yeah. All right.
For some reason, this is two things in one. One, John is the only person I know that could leave... to go to the movies after it started and get there before the previews begin.
That's true. You can do that.
It's a unique skill and used to drive us in the red
van.
The red van, yeah. With no seat belts,
no seats
really.
Wait, who's Andy? I've known you long enough for you to experience that. Obviously, yes. I've known Jarrett long enough.
Yeah,
you never saw the red van. Mm-mm. And Brandy's never saw. And
I know the red van.
Were you?
Did no,
you
he was never. He's too small.
Never got tumbled by it, but I remember. No.
All right. Well, what my dad used to do is
there was no seats. It was plywood.
This is back in the day before.
It's a red
before everything
van.
Got so litigious. You know what I mean?
So PC.
Yeah. Back in the day, when you would other families would entrust their children to my dad's protection for the evening.
Silly rabbit.
And in exchange for this this trust, he would put them in the back of a Dodge Ram van.
Like eight or nine kids.
Yeah, eight or nine kids, and he replaced the rubber floor with a wood floor.
So I could slide my equipment in.
So we can hose down the blood after driving us to the movies.
And give splinters to unsuspecting children.
So, you know, there will be eight or nine of us. Let's go to the movies. You know, Richie's dad's going to take us to the movies. And we'd all sit in the back, and he says, "Everybody, you know, everybody secure? Good, I'll drive nice and safe." And then he would, like, go 75 miles over, like, hills and potholes and swerve. And then it turned into a game. Like, that was more fun than the movies.
Yeah.
Kids would, like, try to stand up the whole time. And they it was like watching, you know, when they pick the lotto, the lotto number?
It was a big Lucite drum.
What I would do is I'd find an open stretch of road, and I figured if the movie was a sucky movie, I said, let's have some fun. I put the kids in the van, and then I would go, you know, 30, 40 miles an hour, and then I'd swerve left, swerve right, swerve left and right, and then I'd stop on the brakes real hard. And one time, Damien almost rolled through the windshield. It was like the ball from the Indiana Jones. This thing is going down. It's
no,
like,
I had to lower it because you were peeking it.
No, but I mean, the stand, it's like it needs Viagra or something. On the mush.
Guess who's here in Brooklyn? Because they say Viagra.
Viagra.
And Viagra.
And
then Alice. Scratch your ass. All right.
Along the line with the movie thing, too, for a very short time when we were, when we became friends, I thought that your dad was in, like, the mafia. Because I just, the same thing with like the movies, like eight or nine of us would go to the movies, and it was like when we went to the movies with my parents, we had to stand in line and wait, and then like you would go and you'd go shake somebody's hand, and then we would all go into the movie.
You know what? He makes a good point. You can't fault him for that logic. That sound, how'd that happen?
How it actually happened was I went to the movie one night, and one of the guys, the security guys, because there was a rocky little area we used to go to, and there was a fight, and I went behind one of the bouncers, the security guys, and I says, "I got your back," and I did have his back. So then after that, he introduced me to the head security guy, and he said, "This guy's good," and they started letting me into movies. And when they did that, then I came back at them with a tip. You know, I gave each guy like $100. And then I was like, gold.
So you paid for 2 years worth of movies and got to go to the movies for free for 1 year. Very good, Dad.
Yeah, but I was able
I'm
to
telling
bring people.
Mom.
I never had to wait on the line for the tickets or anything. Just walk right in. I'd be sitting in while the guys are waiting out in the hallway on the line for... I'm sorry about this.
It's all right. I went on a date once to the movies with my friend Courtney. And we go to the... Yeah! And we go on a date. And I went to that same movie theater, and you know, I had my you know, my nice clothes on, and I'm, you know, and we go to the front, and I'm waiting online, and all of a sudden one of the guys in the theater sees me. He goes, "Hey, you're John's son, right?" I go, "Yeah." He goes, "Come on in." And we bypass the line, and me and the girl goes back, and we're sitting down in the theater, and she looks at me, she goes, "What does your dad do?" So it wasn't only him. It spilled over to me, which was great.
You know? But I remember going to my dad and be like, "How come you don't shake people's hands and go into the movie?" And then we would go out for dinner sometimes, and they would just bring lots of food that nobody ordered. I don't know what I want to stay in this family.
You're gonna need to defend yourself, Dad, because so far he's got two strikes against you.
These aren't strikes. These are all plus.
No, my dad's in the mob now. I didn't know that, and now you just convinced me. My whole life has been a sham.
I'm sure I just outed some federal.
I
gotta
tell you one thing. We just came back from Vegas, and we went out and to a place, a restaurant my friend owns in Vegas, and. 13 of us went there, and the guy just laid out all kinds of like appetizers on appetizers and appetizers, and we ordered our food, who we can hardly eat, and dessert, and he goes, no check.
What?
13 people, and my ex-wife was with me.
Wow.
So it was very nice.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, but that's just because we were friends, and I've always done favors to people, and people don't realize that. A lot of times, what you're seeing is a reciprocation. It's not a gesture of them from the front. It's like, basically, I've done nice things for them. And that's a message to all you young men. Yeah. Always be nice to people. Treat people like you want to be treated. It's like, you know, it's almost biblical. You know, do unto others as you'd have them do unto you. That's what you would do. You treat people really nice, they'll treat you really nice.
It's actually a really good segue, because I know that that's instilled from you from your mom and dad, too, who owned Bath Music in Brooklyn for, I don't know how many years.
It was 40 years. It was from around 1964 to about 2004, 2005. And my mother and father ran that. And it was a music store in Brooklyn, New York. It was on Bath Avenue, and it's a legend. And when my mom passed, they named the street after her.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about that.
You know, that's kind of a unique thing. And it was a great, great, great store. It was a legendary store. The thing of it was, they worked for 40 years and never had any employees. And they would feed people by the score, and constantly feeding people.
Everyone in Brooklyn, my dad grew up in Brooklyn. He knew about the store. Yeah. And every time you went into the store, you would get fed as well.
You know, they never had any employees, but they had an awful lot of people doing work for them.
Like I said, just be nice to people and they'll do nice things for you.
We've met people around the country, though. When they hear the last name, they say Castellanos of Bath Avenue. Like, they know instantly. Like, oh, I used to eat over there. Yeah.
My mom, she used to make, like, she developed a method of making meatballs. That she used to make them in a wok, you know, you used to fry them up. Some people make like 8, 10 meatballs at a time, 12 meatballs, whatever. My mom would make them by the 100. She'd do 100 at a time.
And you know how it is? And
she'd make them, and guys would be waiting as they're coming out of just the frying part before you put them into the sauce. And they'd go downtown and they'd get loaves of bread from some famous bakery. And then they would wait for it to come out of the frying, the wok. And they would be just eating them as like hot, like they were dealing with hot rocks. Yeah. And it was like a line. It was a crazy, crazy
that's
thing.
The best way to eat
and that's in the back of a music store, imagine.
Richie, have we ever told the story on this about when your grandmother made breakfast for us when we house sat for your sister?
No, we have not told that story.
Please do.
This is a good. You want to do it? Or you want me
no,
to do
tell it.
My sister used to have an apartment around the corner from my grandmother's music store. So she went on vacation somewhere, and she asked if I would house sit for her, like, you know, just watch her apartment, make sure everything was okay. And me and Jarrett were what, like 14, 15 years old,
15, something like that. Yeah.
So, all right, we basically, this was like the most fun thing and the most like wild thing we've ever done up until that point.
We watched Seven on Laserdisc.
Oh yeah, that's how old this was. We watched the movie Seven on Laserdisc, and it gave me nightmares. But I'll give you an example. We ordered. Oh, I think me and Andy Graziano, who was our friend, he stayed the first night. You just stayed the second night.
Yeah.
The first night, Andy and I got an L&B pizza from Brooklyn, 86th Street, and we ate the entire thing. That's like, what, 14, 12 slices.
Right. Yeah.
And 6 slices each, and they're big. And we ate the entire thing. And the next night, he slept over, and then...
we got more L&B.
Yeah, yeah. And I said, Jarrett, you want to go get breakfast? He goes, yeah. I was like, let's go around the corner to the music store. So my grandmother's there, and she goes, I said, Grandma, can we have breakfast? And she goes, okay, what do you want? And I look at Jared, and he looks at me like, you know, bacon and eggs.
Sure.
Which is something I wouldn't normally ask for. If I was like, you know, a guest at someone's house, I'd be like, oh, cereal or a bagel, whatever you have is fine.
Uncle Buck-sized pancakes.
But because I knew my grandmother would, you know, would go the extra mile, I said, you know, bacon and eggs. And she goes, all right, I want you to go to the store and get a dozen double yolk king-sized eggs.
They don't sell double yolks.
Right, was that what it was?
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, okay. And get me like a pound of bacon or something. So now my grandmother, because she had developed these cooking methods for mass quantity, she was unable to do something like, here's an egg. So she...
Here's an egg each.
So all... So
should we go get the eggs?
All 24 yolks go onto the frying pan. You know what I mean? And she goes, and we're hanging out in the store, and then, like, you know, a half hour later, she goes, Dolly's breakfast. So we go out, and she had it in the backyard for us. It was nice out.
Yep.
And we're in the backyard on a little bench, and we see two plates that look like the mountain from Close Encounters with eggs. Right?
Yes.
And we both looked at it.
Basically a reconstructed pig of bacon.
Yeah, right. And we both looked at the table and got full just by looking at it. Because just the thought, like I remember, like I took a bite and I looked at him, I go, I'm full, man. And he goes, and for the first time ever, I heard you say,
I was like, I don't know what to do. Like, just one bead of sweat came down my, just, I'm just like, I panicked. I'd never seen that much food in person.
Oh my God. Yeah, that was the first time I ever got full just by looking at something. So yeah, she
it's never happened again.
No. Yeah, that's why everybody called her Mama C. Mm-hmm. Mama C. She would cook for everybody.
She also had like an army of mentally unstable people that would do errands for her. Like I remember,
that's a nice way to talk about your family.
Yeah. They weren't mentally unstable. They had special needs.
Special needs.
And what it was that she would take care of them. She would make sure they had a bank account. She made sure they had an apartment and they had food. And that's what she did. So that's what she did for them.
You know, and they really put a lot of trust in her. And she put a lot of trust in them in return. Because I remember being like, you know, 8 years old. And I said, Grandma, I want a slice of pizza. All I did was ask my grandmother for food. But so I said, Grandma, I want a slice of pizza. And she goes, oh, okay. I'll get someone to walk you to the pizzeria. And she asked this guy who was like insane. Right? He was like muttering to himself the whole time. Like, oh, take my grandson to the pizzeria. So I'm like a little boy walking through the streets of Brooklyn with this guy who was like, you know, like nuts. Like
challenge.
Yeah, challenge. No, this guy, this was scary, but it was totally normal to me because this is the type of environment she had at the store. But, you know, that was a different time.
That man, Stevie Wonder. Oh, I'm just trying to think of somebody. Being as that we're talking about Brooklyn and stuff, and when you grew up and, you know, living in Brooklyn with your parents, how did you get? I know you're from a very musical family, five generations of musicians, but
no, I'm five generations. He's four generations.
That's still five generations
that we know of.
Yeah.
How did you want to start playing? Did your parents kind of impose it on you, or how did you?
It's just a funny story. Basically, I'm an athlete. That's what I started out. I was an athlete. I was always into sports, winning contests and skating and you know, fastest guy around in the neighborhood and that type of thing.
You did a lot of kung fu, too, didn't you?
Yeah, it actually was taekwondo.
Taekwondo.
So, but I started that later in my life. But I originally started with Shotokan karate, which is a Japanese-style karate. I did that at 15. But I was basically an athlete. And then there was a girl I liked, and I was a football player on the football team, and I got hurt and had to do a surgery on my back, let's put it that way. And she came to visit me in the hospital, and she had an album under her arm, and it was Meet the Beatles. And she was going off how handsome they all were and how gorgeous they were, and I'm going, I'm as good looking as at least three of them.
I don't know what you mean.
You're not gonna compare with Paul McCartney, so... So I wanted to play guitar. My father tried to get me to play accordion. My father had a thing for accordion plays. They always thought they were like, you know, they were the ruled the band, and you had to play the changes that they played and play the bass note that they were.
So like what keyboard players morphed into like 20 years later.
Right. Okay. Exactly. Right. So.
And now what DJs have become.
that's a joke that became a reality. So anyway, I started to play accordion and I couldn't do it. I mean, I couldn't do it because it was buttons and keys and squeezing in and out, and I was getting all confused and I was getting spastic at it. So I gave up and I quit, and I was like 13 or 14 quick. And then this happened with the football thing, and this girl came up with the Beatle album, and I said, I want a guitar. And on my 17th birthday, and my birthday was 3 days ago, 4 days ago, my 17th birthday, my father gets me this little Kent. No, he got me a Harmony guitar and then two F holes. And it was impossible to play. It was just, and my father, now him being a musician, he wouldn't say this, but he says, a poor carpenter blames his tools.
That's what he said to
him. But Dad, I can't play an F chord on it. I'm trying.
You know what? I understand why. I have his bass upstairs. I can't play that thing either.
He's a lefty, remember?
Well, that's why. I got to play it from the other side.
But the other side.
You got to turn it upside down.
The action falls differently. So the funny thing was, I'm trying to learn, I'm trying to play, and I'm just about ready to quit on this thing, and I'm walking up the street one day, and there's a kid on his porch, not on his porch, on his stoop, playing a guitar, I think it was, a Goya guitar, had a perloid neck, and I'm looking at his guitar, and I go, wow, it's a beautiful guitar, and he goes, oh, do you play? So I said, yeah, I just got a guitar. So I played his guitar, and the epiphany, you know, that thing where the light goes off in your life, and bing, I play his guitar, and I'm playing my E chord, and I'm playing my C chord, and my D chord, and when I go for the F chord, I play it clear as a bell, and I go, it was the guitar. It was the guitar. And that's when I really got, I said, wow. And that guy turned out to be Joey Maroney, which was Uncle Richie's brother.
Yeah.
And that was it was all happened from that. And that's like my whole life changed on that day.
Maybe Grandpa was supposed to give you a slide with that guitar.
He could have. But you know what? He didn't know the nuances about playing, you know, first fret chords. Because what is a bass player playing an upright bass going to know from that?
Yeah.
You know, he's all playing. He's going to find his substitute notes up here. Mm-hmm. And all my stuff was down on the bottom by the nut.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's why it was impossible to play.
When I'm going to ask a question. When did you start singing? Did you sing before you played guitar?
No. What happened was, well, I did sing a little bit when I was a kid at a community center when I was probably around 8 or 9. And there was the Becker brothers. It was this guy, Becker or Beckman brothers, and it was Sandy and his brother, and we sang in a talent, and I sang 16 tons. You load 16 tons, what do you get? Another. So we sang that song, and that was really great, because, you know, in the hallways, you hear the echo, was great. So then I don't sing, but I'm listening to guys singing harmony in the streets and stuff like that, but I never sang. And then we had a band, and we started getting jobs. So as soon as I started playing at 17, we got good enough to like get songs, but we didn't have a singer. So we had, we grabbed one kid, Richie McCrato, and he started to sing with us. But I says, I want to try singing. Now, I was the only one coordinated enough to sing and play it first. And I sang Love Potion Number 9, and they basically fell down laughing at me. No, they fell down looking at me. I mean, any other person would have been crushed by this. Because you can't sing. Oh, it's terrible. I had friends of mine, people, I love to come hear you play, but I can't listen to you sing, they would tell me. And I would never get discouraged at it.
Wait, how long did this go on for?
Let's play some of that.
You hit Love Potion Number 9?
Love Potion Number 9, yeah.
No, I don't remember it.
That's why they laughed at him. He couldn't remember the words.
What a course. So anyway, it was like, they went on for about a year or two, man, you know?
When did you discover that you sounded like a black person?
Well, here's the ironic thing about that is...
Hey!
Sorry, Jared has passed the torch for me.
When he saw his first black person.
No, what happened was, I got to college. First of all, I was a football player, but I was also a class clown.
Oh, that's when.
Right? So I'm a class clown. I'm constantly fooling around. I was the class comedian. That means I didn't have good grades. I was always fooling around, messing around. So it was an Italian teacher... taught us Italian language, and he says there's this program, you know, because at that time it had, you know, the affirmative action was just starting with Kennedy and around that time.
And
there was this thing called the College Discovery.
Everybody's program. Looking at me like I'm insane.
So the College Discovery program was basically for poor students. Yeah. Nobody in Lafayette High School at that time took this program. Nobody went and applied for it. So he says, you should apply for it. I wasn't going to go to college. I didn't have no marks. So I got on it, and I got a scholarship. And I remember going to my first day of school. They paid for my books. They paid money for my transportation. They paid for the tutors. And I go there, and it was me and about 120 black and Puerto Rican kids. And that's it. I was the white raisin in the mix. And I'm listening to the Beatles and stuff like that. And these guys are listening to Smokey Robinson, Ray Charles, The Temptations, and they're telling me that basically what I'm listening to is shit.
Beatles suck, man.
Well, they weren't. You know, like they were saying, you can't compare the Beach Boys to The Temptations.
Wow.
And that's basically where I started getting. And then I had a singer in the band, Frank Voda. And he said, you got to listen to Ray Charles, man. And little by little, and I found out that this stuff that I was doing, when I was doing the white guy music, it was them imitating black guys' songs. So,
right.
You know, Love Potion Number 9 was by a black group, you know? So I found out that was where my natural affinity lied. And the more I worked with black musicians, and I played with all black bands, played with the Chambers Brothers, played with the Eighth Day in Detroit, and it was like, you know, it came natural. It's what who I am. I was born a small black child. A poor black child.
We're going to play something right now. But on I know I haven't showed you this. I know I haven't showed you any of these full shows yet. What we do is, my hope is that people listen to this and they're like playing their guitar or keyboard while they listen.
And while they drive.
Who's buzzing? Someone's buzzing. We'll find out who's buzzing.
No, he's fixing the mic here.
No, there's
I don't hear anything either.
I hear a buzz.
I hear a buzz.
I'm getting a buzz.
That sounds like a 50s song.
It's the bass. Simpsons. It's alright, I'll kill it later.
I hear a buzz. Buzz, right. Buzz. Buzz, indie buzz. I hear a buzz.
That makes it much better. Here we go.
Okay. So we're gonna do the amazing song Drift Away by Dobie Gray, who was also Harry Potter's pet, right? Dobie? Was that a good
a
pull?
He's
a Dobby. That was
what? Close.
He wasn't a pet.
It's Dobby or Dobie?
Dobby. It's Dobby.
So Dobie Gray. The song is by Dobie Gray, who's Harry Potter's friend.
What?
He was a house elf.
What race was he?
He's a free elf.
He's a free elf. This is by a free elf. The song. All right. I don't know what the original key is, but you know, my dad does a lot of songs in his own keys because it suits his voice better. So we're gonna teach you the John Castellano version. So that's okay. Look, I know a lot of John Castellano versions of songs. Okay, so you're doing this in G, right?
Yeah.
All right. Play the intro.
It's like this.
Okay, what chords are those?
That's G, G, C, G.
All right, so what he's doing is he's playing a G, and he's inverting it up to another G. So he's playing a G on the 7th fret, right?
Yeah, G.
Right, like a C chord shape of the bar. And then he's moving it up to an A side bar chord, the 10th fret G. And then he's doing a C, like a 12th fret sort of bar C,
like a root first fret shape, C,
right?
Then I go back to the G.
Yeah. It goes back the way he came, and then now, nice. And then I'm very excited because I get to use the Hofner with the flat wounds, and I get to go. Listen to that. Listen to that.
By the way, I'm playing a Tom Anderson.
Yes.
A custom-made Tom Anderson.
Why don't you talk about your rig right now? Because you're actually using your entire rig. It's just a lot lower than I'm used to hearing it.
Yes. Well, I'm hearing it through a headset, through a board, but I basically use all Fender. Vintage Fender amps. These happen to be my newest ones. They're from 1981. I have four Vibraverbs with the 210s. I'm using one of them right now. And I'm
He's not using all four right now.
He's using all four. They're in different rooms of my house, mic'd up.
But I do that because of my craziness, because I'm always worried about losing one or breaking one, not having it. So I have... what are you doing to me?
I was just getting them... Whatever.
I'm trying to hit a moving target here. So I have four of those and seven of these Andersons. Ready?
So take
now,
us.
Now, there was no rehearsal on this. Okay,
There's never rehearsal on this.
All right, I just had dental surgery, so I have 10 stitches inside my mouth right now, but we're going to do this anyway.
Oh, man. Okay, so the chords. It starts on the four chord.
No, it starts on the one chord. One, one.
Well, I'm saying this
four,
verse.
Four, one, one, four, one.
And then it goes.
G, G, C, G, G, C, G.
And then where does it go?
It's four. Day after day, I'm all confused.
G, right? C.
And I look for the light through the pouring rain.
G. C.
You know that's a game I hate to lose.
It now goes to A minor.
I'm feeling the strain, yeah.
Now, G.
Give me the beat, boys, free my soul. Wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. Like that, right?
Yeah, and then again it goes, the free my soul, D, lost in your rock and roll and G. And then we're gonna add a measure of C there. Then back to the intro. Okay, so that's the verse and the chorus. Now there's a bridge, goes to the A minor.
When my mind is free,
C.
No melody can move
G.
me.
A minor.
When I'm feeling blue,
C.
My guitar's coming through
first. We're gonna drop out, except for him and you, and like, and Andy's gonna keep some time on the hi-hat. Okay.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it. I think it sounds good. Oh, vocals. Sorry. So he goes, "Give me the beat, boys, to free my soul. I wanna get." All right. Now, Anne-Marie, what are you gonna sing?
Give me the, I don't know. What was
so,
it? What?
Give me the beat, boys, to free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away. All right, and then I'll sing, give me the beat, boys, to free, free my, give me the beat, boys, right?
Yeah.
All right, let's do it, all three of us. 3, 4.
Give me the beat, boys, and free my soul. I wanna get lost in your rock and roll and drift away.
That sounds okay. All right, let's different.
Now, can you do a bass note, Andy?
Where are you
give
guys?
Give me the beat, boys.
Breathe there.
No, I'm kidding. I'm
out
joking.
Of my mouth.
I'm joking.
That's not what I meant.
I can't go there.
Where you breathe, breathe is really important. I'm just asking where.
I'm like, not even focusing on it. No, it's terrible.
Oh.
No, God. What's Andy doing?
Sorry, Andy.
I'm trying to go low.
All right, don't worry about it.
Just because you have solid gold headphones on does not mean that you can use that voice.
Andy looks like he's in Daft Punk right now with his headphones.
They're amazing.
Don't encourage. This is why he bought them.
Okay.
You have black right. chrome.
Black chrome.
So, all right, we ready?
All right, so, ready? Here we go.
Sorry. This is odd playing through the headset and singing live. You realize that?
I'm sorry.
Yeah.
was great, Dad.
We don't have to do another fucking thing for the rest of this show.
Yeah.
That's it. Let's end.
Okay, good night, everybody.
Jeez. That was great.
This thing's on the mush, I gotta tell you. This mic stand is...
Sorry.
Hello.
We got it at Castellano's House of Music in two convenient locations in Staten Island. Let's talk about that, too, actually, now that I bring that up.
Yeah.
When you... House of Music's been open for since 93?
20 years, 93.
When did you decide that you wanted to open music stores in Staten Island?
Well, it's an ironic thing. All right, so I'm in the music business, right?
Right.
And I'm doing, like, you know, I'm playing, like, 20 years, whatever I'm playing. Playing since 67. I'm playing 10 years, right? Playing 10 years. I get married. I have a baby. I get divorced. I meet my second wife. I marry my second wife. What are you going to do? How are you going to support this wife? You're going to do it on music jobs? And I'm doing everything. I mean, I'm doing everything. I mean, you guys don't... Well, you realize it now. When you got to work, what is your job? I'm a musician. So I was doing 7 nights a week. I was playing 7 nights a week. I remember one stretch I did 113 music jobs in 105 days. And then we did another one right after that, about 103 jobs in about 100 days. And me and my partner, Joey Ardigo, we worked back to back, and we just worked. Like, we would do music jobs, we would do nightclubs, and we'd go to after hours clubs and play for tips. Or we'd do a bridal show in the morning, and then we'd do a bar mitzvah in the afternoon, and then we'd play a wedding at night. And we did what you get, you know, and you'd meet yourself. That's when I seen that commercial, that Dunkin' Donuts commercial, Time to Make the Donuts. We started to laugh when me and Joey seen that. We said, time to make the donuts. We would meet in the car, you know, both in our tuxedo pants and our equipment lugged in the back of his Chevy with the big trunk, and we'd go to work, man. And that's what you did. So I said, I'm going to open up a music store. So what happened was I had a friend, a caterer, and I was able to throw a wedding for me and my wife now of 37 years. We get married, and it cost us $3,000, and we raised $13,000 at the wedding from gifts. So with the $10,000, we found this little store on Fort Hamilton Parkway and 69th Street. And what we did was, it was a store with an apartment in the back. So me and Gail could move into the back of the store, live in the back of the store,
right,
and have the store in front. And we put double gates. So we had gates on the outside of the windows, gates on the inside of the windows, and an alarm on the window. So we would lock ourselves in with two gates. And then we go sleep in the back and live in the back, shower in the back, you know, the whole thing. That's how we lived. Until Richie came along, then her mother said, my daughter's not going to live in behind the store. So then we got an apartment. But at that time, we had a store in 1977. Between 1977 and 1985, we had a music store in Brooklyn called Guitar City. And now picture this. My parents are on 21st Avenue in Bath, and I'm on Fort Hamilton and 69th. For you people who don't know what that means, I was about 3 miles, 4 miles away from my mom and dad. So basically, they would give me some of their business. And we had Maggio in the middle. And Mr. Maggio, who was the gentleman that he had always been, he came over to my store, and he basically gave me a box of cookies and said, hey, good luck, and, you know, welcome to the business. And I did that for 7 years. 8 years, and then they did construction on the street, and basically they wiped me out. They wiped me and 8 of the stores out of business because it took 2.5 years to complete a project. They were doing some water mains, catch basins, curbs, gas lines, the whole thing. So we went out of business, and I remember we were looking at the Sunday Times, and I was looking at what any job I could do. So I got hired as a friend of mine gets me a job as a used car salesman. And I showed up at 9 o'clock in
the
morning.
Like Larry David.
So, you know, I had lots of cars and stuff like that, but I get there at like 9 o'clock in the morning, and, you know, and these guys are all like wired. And by 12 o'clock, he sent me home and said, don't come back. So he fired me by my noon.
Your first day.
Yeah, my first day. And then I got a job working for an alarm company selling, because they paid you, well, they trained you. And it was $300 a week,
okay,
which this was great. I had $300 a week besides doing music jobs. So I would do the, you know, 9 to 5 on that and then do the music jobs at night. So I'm doing what I can. And then they fired me on that.
You were just not suited for regular jobs.
No, but they had to choose between guys that were more qualified, and they were much more qualified than I was. And so that was after six months of doing that. So I was eligible for unemployment. And while I got unemployment, I found a job working for the Heritage Guitars. So I was selling guitars.
When did they fire you?
Well, actually, I wound up leaving. It was wonderful working for these guys. I spent more on gas than they were paying me. Because here's how it was. You get an order for a guitar. You get paid upon the delivery and the payment of the guitar. They took a year to make a guitar. Not 8 months. Not 7 months. It was a year. So you can never get... By the time you got your money,
guitars. Yeah. So, you'll stop playing before it comes in the mail. That didn't work out.
So then one day, and it was a very funny thing, the way this happened. This was wild. I'm driving in my car, and I have a tendency, if I drive too much, I get tired. So I would try to put on radio stations that were very lively, talk shows, sort of like this blog. And it was a soupy sales show I was listening to. And if anybody's ever been in Brooklyn on the Bell Parkway, at that time, there was no cell phones, but there was a gas station by Flatbush Avenue that had two or three phones on the outside with long wires that come in your car. So I hear the Super Sale show, and there's a talent contest, and I get on the microphone, and I sing, As We Stroll Along Together, you know, by The Times.
Give us a little bit of that.
As we stroll along together, holding hands, walking all alone. So in love are we two, no one else but me and you. So in love, are you and I. Like that, right?
Oh, yeah, that was really good.
You win our competition. You're the best singer.
Right, so I said, we're sorry you're the fourth caller.
So now I win this contest, and I'm trying to win a Teddy Ruxpin doll for my daughter, Nicole. I didn't win it. I got dinner for two with Tony Roma's and whatever. So, you know,
which Batman Nicole thing. Now would enjoy.
Your ass is grass. She got a cloud of a rain.
We're gonna have
you.
To edit that one out just for safety reasons.
Edit point right there. Yeah.
So 6 weeks later, you're not allowed to compete on the contest. I hear it's coming on again, and I'm ringing the phone, and I sing "Stand by Me," and I win the contest, and I win a ski vacation for two to Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Nice.
And I thought it was a baloney thing, a bullshit thing that was like to get you out there for like a timeshare. And, you know, they're going to make you go out there. And they got a captive audience. And I said, so I'm looking to sell this thing. And I run into this guy that I did his wedding. And I played his college dances from St. John's. And his name is Steve Meninati. I say, hey, man, how you doing? Yada, yada, yada. And he says, well, I just got back from skiing. I go, oh, you ski? I just won the ski vacation. And what happens is he winds up buying a thing from me, right? So he buys this thing from me. He buys this. He buys a ski vacation for like $1,000. It was a $2,500 vacation. And over dinner, I'm saying, you know, I'm out selling musical instruments and I'm selling them in the car because, you know, I'm working for a company. I just lost my store. You know, 8 years I lost my store.
Right.
And I don't know what to do with myself. You know. And he says, all right. So if I think of anything, I'll call you. And he calls us up and he has two restaurants in the mall for sale. I don't have the money. So I go to my father and I have like this partner, my neighbor on the block, Henry.
Yeah.
And we open the stores. We run these stores for like 6 years. We run South Philly Steaks and the Brooklyn Bagel. But every Wednesday on my day off, I would go out and I'd look at guitars. I was in music stores like a fanatic, like I was a drug addict. And I would buy guitars every chance I could afford, $400 or $500. I'd be buying a guitar. I'd be sticking. I had 36 guitars.
That's why we had so many guitars.
Yes.
And then when you opened the store, they all went away.
Yes, because they all went into the store.
I just remember, I remember that time just being a kid while you were at work. I'd be home and he had these racks that you could put 9 guitars in each rack.
I had 4 racks.
Yeah, and our whole basement was just filled with not shit guitars. Right. The only shit guitars that there were mine. Like, you know,
don't put that on the rec.
Yeah. I had one guitar. He bought me a John Lennon Rickenbacker, which I still have, and that was allowed on the rec. Everything else, don't put that on the
rec.
I
remember that rec. It was like the ultimate like stand of
yeah,
pipes.
It was all piped, right. But it was nine guitars, which is ridiculous because now you have those like rock stands that you fit nine guitars in about 4 feet.
Right.
You know,
but these displayed them beautifully. Yeah, they were meant for stores. That's why I had my whole basement full.
Well,
of
I remember where you bought them. You bought them at the NAMM show.
Yeah.
We were at the NAMM show and we saw a booth had them, and it was really like they were on an angle. You know, it looked like stadium seating with
three
guitars.
Three stadium seatings of three threes.
Right. And he said, "Where do you get those?" And he bought them on the spot. But he had, I remember, this is a good guitar geeking thing here. You had Les Pauls, multiple Les Pauls.
Multiple Les Pauls.
I remember you had a Sunburst. Custom.
I had a gold top.
You had a gold top. He had the SG
custom
the,
white.
Like, but not that one. You had the gold one, which was like the Les Paul SG with the three pickups.
Yeah.
You had, I think, you had a white standard.
Yeah.
Let's see if I can remember if I can recite all these guitars here. You had a Jazzmaster.
I had Rickenbackers, Telecasters.
Yeah, you did. You had a Rickenbacker 3312. You had. You had the black Tele with the paisley, with the one that Graziano has now.
Yeah.
You had Strats. Yeah. You had those ugly green Strats that you liked so much.
Yeah, because I was buying them at $185.
Okay, I like them now too.
He was buying them with ski vacations.
You had some Gretches. You had a Country Gentleman that Paul Simon ended up buying.
Yeah.
Let's see.
Through Flip.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He had a 64 pre-CBS Strat.
Wow.
And that one was butter, but he never liked it. You just.
Because you know what is? I like small necks, and that was a big neck.
Yeah.
See, if I would have had a 57, that would have been. I probably would have kept it.
Let me tell you, there's something about the old Strats with the pickups all like demagnetized, and they sound better than the new ones.
That's because everybody goes the wrong way. They figure if they make the magnets stronger, the guitar's going to sound better. And actually, that's not the case.
Right. And I think my favorite guitar that you had, I hate to bring it up again.
Which you're gonna?
Which I'm going to. He had a. Well, actually, no. Is this
the one that you
tried? The refinished Tele.
Here's two.
The Tele, yeah.
I got two good stories
this
about
is the one
that.
One that got away.
He had a Tele that was like a refinished, like salmon colored Tele with like a brown paisley.
Yes,
brown like pearloid pickguard. And it had EMGs in it. It probably sounded like shit, but
it did.
I remember it was like for a small hands, like I was 13 at the time, it felt great. But he got rid of that. So if anybody here bought that guitar from my dad, call me.
Bird's Eye Maple on the neck. A lot of Bird's Eye, which I don't trust Bird's Eye.
Yeah, but I love that. So if you know what the thing is? I feel like at this point, if I ever track down that guitar, I'd play it like, this is what I liked. I'd play it for 2 seconds like, this thing sucks. No wonder why he sold it. But
it's because you still have small hands.
Yeah, my hands never grew. And the
hands
other
of
guitar,
a small ocean
the other funny story is he had these Les Paul 60 Classics, which were great. In the 90s, Gibson made these lightweight Les Pauls with thin necks and the uncovered humbuckers that were hotter than the other pickups. So a lot of Les Pauls aren't as hot as people think, but these pickups were ridiculous. You know what I mean? Like, you'd get tons of sustain.
I just traded one that I acquired from Chris, who was on the original batch.
Yeah.
And I traded one for a 1988 12-string Rickenbacker Carl Wilson.
Oh my God, that's a very rare
condition.
Guitar.
That's a rare guitar.
So. Go to Cass Lanell's House of Music and talk turkey with my dad. But anyway, the story behind that was I was playing this Les Paul a lot, and I used to bring it to school with me, and it was pretty much my guitar. Like, because I had the Rickenbacker that he got me, but as soon as like I hit puberty, it got too small. I couldn't play. And as soon as I got interested in like lead guitar, you can't really play leads on a 3/4 size guitar, especially a Rickenbacker, because you put any sort of distortion on it, it buzzes. You know what I mean? It's got its uses, that guitar, but everything sounds like John Lennon on that guitar. Everything sounds like, you know, I saw standing there. So I started playing his Les Paul, and he saw that I was playing it. He was like, "Yeah, whenever you want to use it." So one day I went to go grab it, and Dad, where's Les Paul? Oh, I sold it.
I'm a merchant.
Yeah, I sold it. And he's a merchant. That's not the worst part. He sold it to the guitar player in my band. So now, not only did I not have a guitar, but I had to see my fucking friend playing it at band practice all the time. So it's like, nice guitar, man. Oh, yeah. You're welcome to play it anytime. Yeah, thanks. Thanks. That was my guitar a week ago. But then he goes, you know, why don't you pick a guitar out that you like? You know, it's time to get a guitar. And that's when he, I thought, I remember seeing at a trade show the Music Man Van Halen, and I remember I liked that it had it, like it looked like a Fender neck with like a Gibson body, because you know, because I always liked, I had a Telly, and I played my, and which I liked the neck of, but I had my dad's Les Paul that I liked the sound of. Right. So I remember seeing that guitar looking like, oh, well, I can get the neck that I like,
right,
and I can get the pickups that I like. So I looked up the price, and it was like $1,800, right, which was ridiculous. So I, for me, at whatever, 16 years old, so I started saving and saving and saving, and I got, I think I got together like $900, right, and I said, Dad, I really want the guitar, but I only have $900, which is like halfway there. He goes, don't worry about it, I'll cover the rest of it. So thank you, Dad. And then, and I got, so I went to, where's DiBella we went?
Oh, DiBella.
Yeah, I went to DiBella Music, and they had one in stock, and I remember I played it, and I said, yep, this is good, I'll take this one. And so all this time, I'm like, you know, everybody's like, oh, wow, how much was that guitar? I was like, well, it was 18, but I saved up all my money. I paid for half of it. My dad got the rest. Oh, yeah, that's so cool. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Then years later, I remember him saying in conversation, oh, yeah, my son's got one of those Van Halen. Oh, yeah, I paid 12 for it.
No, no. I'm like, what? That's a true story.
Wait, what? He goes, I said, oh, I mean, yeah, you know, I got it for 12. I said, the so you made me sick. Think, you made me think that I had half the money saved up. And, you know, $1,200. Thanks. You came with $300 to get my guitar, Dad.
I need to tell you this.
That was how much your first Harmony guitar was, I bet.
What it was the guitar was selling for $17. I got it for
$850. Oh, no! Oh, you made $50 off of it.
I had a drive there, didn't I?
And then he gave that money to the guy at the movies so we could go in and not have to wait in line. It all comes around again.
That's how it works.
Oh my God.
That's what it's called, currency. It has to circulate.
You know, when I used to buy stuff from Grandpa at the music store, I have a feeling he beat me every single time I bought something.
He did to me too.
Like, I remember I bought, like, that guitar on the wall is a Kramer Pacer, right? And he sold it to me for $50, which is a very valuable guitar now. It's an American patent pending Kramer Pacer, right? He sold me $50. I'm pretty sure he only paid $30 for it if he sold it to me for $50.
My father was the greatest horse trader in the world. He sold me guitars for $500. I would not even quibble with him. I didn't care if he made money on it, because I would turn around and sell it for $7.
So that's what you got to do.
That's what you got to do. It's learn how to do it.
We kind of glossed over something, and it's kind of...
Oh, wait, I didn't tell them how it happened. So here's what happens one day, answering your question that happened 20 minutes ago, was that I'm in the restaurants, and I'm doing that yada, yada, yada. And then I remember going to a gas station one day, and I said, give me $10 worth of gas. And I feel like a guy gives the gas, and I go to give him the money. He goes, nah, man, you sold me a Les Paul, and it was the greatest guitar in the world. This gas is on me. And that's when I realized I should have been in the music business. So my first opportunity, I got out, I bought a building, and I opened up a music store. And I took all my 36 guitars from the basement. We put it in the store. And then Chris gave me his collection, and we had all not for sale.
Already sold.
It was all our collections. We had like 60 guitars in there, and then we filled out the rest of our own.
Well, that's similar to what when Pop opened the store.
Yeah.
He had your band's backline,
yeah,
and his store looked full. It had Marshall stacks and Lowry organs and Bruce amps.
Four Marshall stacks. There was 8 Marshall bottoms we had in there. We had Hammond with 3 Leslies. We had seven or eight big custom columns with 3 15s, 2 15s and a 16-inch horn. And we had like 4 of the monitors with the 512s or 510s, whatever it was in it. So when the store was, when our equipment was in, it was fine. But when the band went out on the job, Pop was sitting there with a counter.
Yeah, two Zingars on the wall.
That's how Bath Music started.
Now, when did the Chambers Brothers happen?
I started, you know, because...
Hey, Richie here again. Sorry to cut the show off, but we're going to cut this into 2 parts. So you can tune in next week to hear the end of that amazing story and even more songs. Thanks for listening to the Band Geek Podcast. Check us out on riotcast.com. See you next week.